Hey, I just checked the email. Have you... Okay, well, you didn't log in, did you? Jesus! Wednesday, what if it was like a keylogger or something? We don't know this person. No, listen. I understand, but is this not sending off alarm bells? Like, it should be. 6 months of radio silence, and then she makes us a website out of the goodness of her heart? What the fuck is Dear Evelyn?
Welcome back, listeners. Thank you for joining us tonight in the Creepypasta Book Club, the podcast where we read, analyze, and discuss significant creepypastas, no sleeps, and web horror flash fiction. We are your hosts, Jonah.
And Wednesday.
And today, we are discussing the Dionea House. Emails from Mark Condry to his old friend, Eric. He's learned some disturbing news recently about another man, Andrew, from their group, back in the old days, and is reaching out to try and learn more. Apparently, Andrew killed a married couple, John and Lucy Madsen, and then himself at a restaurant in Idaho. Mark remembers the last few times before Andrew stopped showing up for game nights. He had to house sit for his stepdad, who owned a lot of real estate and was going out of town. He hated that house because it was too cold to party, but nobody would go house sit with him when he asked. When he returned, his behavior was odd. The whole night, he incessantly quoted commercials, television, and eventually his friends, word for word. Mark doesn't think that was Andrew anymore. He gets in contact with the author of the article, and it turns out that before he shot up the diner, he was muttering the words, "The door is open." Mark decides to go back to Houston to investigate, certain something happened to Andrew in that house. He manages to track down Drew's mother's old apartment and the stepfather's realty business, but both of them vanished in 99, leaving Andrew behind. But he finds something more important, the address for the house. It's a single-story piece of shit, poorly maintained, and though someone seems to be living there now, the previous owners packed up and shipped out a long time ago. The Madsens. According to a relative of John's, they had a hard time in Houston. Everything seemed to go wrong in bizarre little ways, and eventually they bought a motorhome and traveled the country. They broke down in Idaho and asked to stay with a cousin, but they would barricade the door, keep the lights on at all hours, and keep themselves bundled up as if perpetually cold. Mark talks to the police and is allowed to sign for Andrew's personal effects, since nobody else will. Among them are a handful of driver's licenses from different states. The one for Idaho is his current address. Mark drives over. It's the same house. He goes inside. It smells like metal. There are stairs to a second story not visible from the street. Mark finds Drew's backpack and a metal door. Someone's here. He just heard something. The door is open. A week later, Eric is in contact with Mark's girlfriend, Jenny. He's been missing, and the police have found his belongings untouched in his hotel room. Eric receives an article from an impossible email about human remains found on a residential street in Arizona, but he insists that the buck stops with him. Until it doesn't. Eric revives the investigation on his own, and receives emails from a Mr. Paranoia, who believes that the house's flytrap-like properties more strongly affect people who learn about them. He sends Eric the link to a live journal by a 16-year-old girl called Danny. She begins a babysitting gig at an unusually cold house. The little girl, Linny, mutters strange phrases to herself at night, and colored one of her dollhouse rooms red because it smells like cookies and candy. Danny finds a set of keys which belong to Mark. Being in the house drains on her more and more, and Linny's parents seem to be running an experiment. A tendril comes out of the bathtub faucet and wraps around Linny's ankle so tightly it leaves marks, and Danny tries to quit that night in a panic, only for Linny's parents to convince her to stay one more night. She makes only one more entry, the Crooked Man rhyme, ending with a Red Rover call for Jenny to come over. We move to Eric's personal blog as he begins down the same spiral that took Mark. He begins to see a figure in a dirty sweatsuit watching him. He gets a text. Beware, flesh puppet. Eric follows the sweatsuit man in his car. and is led to another iteration of the house. He and a friend make preparations, go to the house, and are never heard from again. A year later, Connie, Eric's wife, memorializes and mourns everyone lost to the flytrap house. For a short epilogue, we meet Laureen. She killed a man in 01 to defend herself from the flytraps, and Mark came looking for her. She had owned one of these houses, and one day in her search for a fuse box, took an axe to the ceiling. It didn't like that. The flytrap tried to lure her up into a newly created attic, with overwhelming smells of bread and sugar, but when she fought back, the house wasn't made of wood and glass. It stretched. She escaped and returned 2 days later to find flesh puppets in her house. One of them stalked her to Utah, and she killed him. Laureen and Connie both promise more, but the trail ends there. So what do we think?
Okay, smash or pass.
What specifically?
The house.
I had never read this before. I had maybe heard of it before, but like, this, I did not realize what a phenomenon this was supposed to be and like how sort of influential this was.
Yeah.
On like the modern pasta scene, because this story kind of has everything.
Yeah, really. But you're dodging the question.
So the thing is, I don't know if I liked the story, so it might be a pass.
Like, does the quality of the story or whether you like the story or not
correlate? Yes.
From the, I see. Shifting to, smash, obviously, but shifting into serious talk, like obviously, I always want to know what your opinions on the story is. That's why we're doing a podcast about that very thing. But like, when you finished it, you had been like, huh, what a strange story. I wrote it down. I really want to know, like, lean in on that. You don't know what you meant by that, but I didn't ask then because I want to wait until we're recording a podcast about that.
I think the thing that registers as strange to me about this experience is that there are some really strong aspects and some really interesting aspects, and I like the sort of feeling of the, like, link chase and the connected universe kind of vibe of, like, the odd line between who's an actual character in the story and who's, like, a gamejacker, because there were so many fucking gamejackers across the whole of this thing.
Oh my god. There's a lot to talk about, specifically how people interacted with the story, like, in the comment section and stuff, and making, like...
Yeah. Overall, it feels as though there is something fundamentally missing in this story. Not even just because, like, it ends without a conclusion because of the situation that happened with it, but also, like, it just, it feels like, because of the way that the story is set up, like, inherently, every single thread of the story is going to end the same way, and it feels like, ooh, there's something, like, missing here.
Yeah.
It, like, if this is something that I'm thinking of as, like, a complete story, something that is meant, because this is, this took off in such a way that, like, it got bought by Warner Brothers or something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, like, pin that. I want to, like,
that's its own discussion.
Yeah, yeah. You you've been on the Creepypasta Wiki, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the Creepypasta Wiki does not have correct links for all of the stuff that is involved, first of all. Like, I realized that towards the end when I saw there's another friend, the friend that I mentioned in the summary. I didn't even include his name because he's not important.
Yeah.
Who gets mentioned in like, the Creepypasta thing.
Like, passing, basically, yeah.
Yeah, who does not get mentioned in the main body of the text and is not mentioned in any of the stuff that is actually linked.
Yeah.
Like, the links that are supposed to go to, like, Laureen's blog or, like, Eric's personal blog, where we get some of these little details about, like, the sweatsuit man, like, didn't work for me because they're, like, at least one of them is only available through, like, archive.org.
I read it first when the website was up, back in the day, and then I read it again now for the podcast on the Wayback Machine, and I was thinking, because, like, you read it, and, like, that was your takeaway of it, and, like, obviously you're reading it now after so many years it's been out, and you've read other things, it wasn't, like, a thing you read it.
Yeah, it's a fucking, like, 20-year-old story. I saw the stuff saying, like, oh, 2004, and I was like, oh, haha, this is, like, a historically set creepypasta. No, this bitch is from 2004 in real life.
Yeah, genuinely, it is, like, proto-creepypasta, I think, before the term was even really coined, right? Like,
I was eight.
Yeah, like, my goodness.
I was not even online. You were, like, in 2004. I was playing fucking, like, Neopets only. I didn't know what the internet was.
Yeah, my goodness.
The internet to me was how I get to Neopets.
How it should be for everyone else. Let's go.
When I was a kid, I thought that Neopets, because I played a lot of, like, CD-ROM games on the computer. I thought Neopets was basically, like, a CD-ROM game that only my parents could figure out how to get to.
No, that's so cute, Jonah. Oh, my God. Oh. I figured out Neopets on my own, and, like, I lied about my age so I could be on the forums, because the forums were, like, 18 and older only back then. You could curse on them. That would make me 13, I think? Well, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I was, like, online, like, on, like, dial-up internet.
Yeah.
Like
fucking logging in.
Yeah, logging in. And it was definitely a time where I'd, like, sneak about to do that. So, like,
yeah.
So, like, this had me, like, being extra risky to finish the story, like, late at night, like, going through it. So it has this kind of, like, wild impact in that way. I really think the format of it, like, is the structure the story's on, and when the structure of the story is removed, there's not, the stories carry itself. A lot of it is, like, the formatting of the thing. And it made me think about, if a story needs structure to, like, tell itself, is the story good? But, like, a lot of things exist attached to the structure, you know?
Yeah, like, I don't think something relying on it, I mean, because it's the medium of it. Like, you wouldn't say, like, is this painting good
it
can't exist as a book, you know? Or, like, I've seen Twitter arguments recently about animation along the lines of, like, is it fair to criticize an animated movie for, like, quote-unquote, relying too much on the visuals? And I think there's merit to both halves of the argument. Like, the story should still be good. The story should always still be good. But I think it's, like, in a way, like, kind of wrong-headed to claim that a story should, like, be able to stand on its own, as though you can, like, separate a narrative from the way the narrative is being told. Like, you can have a story that is weak and a piece of art that relies more on, like, novelty or visual polish or, like, spectacle. But at the same time, I think a lot of people, like, struggle to understand the subtext that's created by the way a story is told in the context of its medium.
So I think reading it, like, straight text on the thing does change the experience of it. It doesn't change that it's, I'm not sure if I'd say pants, because maybe some stuff was planned. I read an interesting line by him, because after we had the revelation that he's an award-winning...
Yeah! Oh my god! This guy wrote a rival, you guys!
A rival blast crazy style.
A rival is a fucking awesome movie.
Oh, okay. So, there's tons to dig in the previous thing we were just saying, but, like, okay, a rival, right? He wrote a rival... Or the screen directed, whatever. He just sang with Arrival.
Like, he wrote the screenplay, right?
Yeah. He did the screenplay and, like, co-directed, co-something, Lights Out with the Insidious guy and a few other people. He writes a lot of these, like, strange power fantasies for women that aren't quite, like, progressive. It's really hard to, like, Arrival is a really moving story, but you can probably say it's, like, a little cisnormative, I guess. This one, there's, like, a weird pattern of, like, I think it had something to do with, like, how the house worked and not necessarily components of the characters.
The characters are not characters in this.
Yeah.
The characters in this are some of the least characters that we have read in a long time. They are fully props. Other than Laureen, who was such a fucking bizarre entry into the story. Laureen's really bad.
But, like, there's a pattern in the story where women are, like, accusing the men of cheating on them. There's no really proof that the women characters are actually doing that. And then the women characters take over the blog. So by the end of the story, it's, like, a fully woman-run, like, supernatural Americana against the monster kind of thing. It's like a power fantasy, but, like, weird.
I didn't see it so much as a power fantasy as much as, like, I was having thoughts about, like, the thematic relationship to the story of masculinity.
Yeah.
And, like, thinking about, like, the crisis of masculinity.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is something that, like, we've been talking, like, even more about, but was still, like, already, like, sort of in the zeitgeist in 2004. The modern, like, what is men's role in domestic life and in, like, this modern reality?
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking about the masculinity thing in concert with, this made me think a lot about Everyman Hybrid with the way that the houses work mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think, like, the way that the house in Everyman Hybrid works is almost more similar to the mechanics of Dionea House than it is to House of Leaves, which is like the most common, like, inspiration point that a lot of people cite as, like, oh, this is where people get, like, weird house horror from in, like, modern, like, especially, like, guy-centric sort of web horror spaces. House of Leaves was, like, published in 2000, I think, 2001, maybe?
Mm-hmm. That sounds real.
So this is sort of, like, fresh off the heels of that, and I feel like is also taking that kind of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And Everyman Hybrid is sort of, like, hitting in between these things thematically, like, hitting the crossroads where, like, House of Leaves is about, like, the psychological terrorism of the nuclear family and the rot of suburban life. Dionea House feels like it's more about the way that, like, grief and particularly, like, men's inability to healthily confront grief parasitizes them. And Everyman Hybrid is, like, doing both of those things.
I think that's true. Like, I think people forget how much this influenced and, like, impacted people. Like, I would really be surprised if this...
Yeah, because it fucking vanished into the ether. I've never heard people talk about this, but it is clearly really influential.
Like, I think a lot of it, too, was people got, like, really hyped up for the idea that a thing birthed online was going to breach into the big thing, and it got, like, scorned, burnt about it, which, like, is silly to, like, they own it now. Like, good job. Like, he has a career and stuff from it, but, like, at what cost, I guess? I mean, I suppose it's, like, a mid-story after all, but, like...
And also, it was kind of crazy... Okay, knowing that this story got very popular and went, like, proto-viral, essentially, but then, like, going to that last, like, very popular journal entry on Eric's blog and seeing that it has, what, like, I don't think it even has, like, 100 comments. It has, like...
wild.
Like, it doesn't have that many comments. And, like, people are saying, like, oh, this story was so good. I made a live journal just to, I made a Blogspot account just to be able to comment on this.
Yeah.
And it's, like, this, 2004 was such a different place on the internet where, like, getting 50 comments on something
was amazing.
Meant, like, that it was viral.
Yeah, like, this is more of an aside. It's sort of, like, I think there's a lot of merit to being able to disable your comments in these spaces. Like, whatever you gain via comments is sort of lost. And there's, like, three categories of people. There are people who, like, who are gonna die if they don't tell you how great the story is and, like, what good job you're doing breaking the immersion for everyone else. There's, like, the game jackers.
Like, he breaks his own immersion
because he comes
into the comments and is like,
thanks.
Hey, guys, I've been talks with multiple producers about turning this into a film.
Yeah, like yeah. But, like, hey, again, people are still doing that.
Ass.
Yeah. Hey, he wrote a rival.
Like, he did write a rival.
Like,
that is crazy. knowing that he went from this story, which is, like,
that's
interesting, and it's much better written than the average, like, piece of web horror that you're gonna come across then or now. But it is still not, like, novel polished or screenplay polished by any
means. It's online. It's just very online.
Knowing that, like, in less than 20 full years, he went from that to Arrival.
Like, he did Lights Out, and then it did Arrival, I think. Once Lights Out came out afterwards. It was 2016, Lights Out. Pertinent note, I watched Lights Out. Not all the way. My internet kept exploding. I was like, I'm not. I need to stop watching this. I'll get back and watch it in full. It was just, like, buffering every, like, 5 minutes. And, like, I don't think I have the strength in me to do it, because it was very good. But, like, there's also, like, I guess to spoil Lights Out. There's also sort of, like, a mother-daughter, like, generational woman angst. It really, really wants to be the Babadook, like, really badly. But, like, the spunky adult woman-daughter is, like, free-spirited and, like, likes tattoos and music and is gonna beat the monster. Which made me think about this story and Arrival. And, like, the thread of that, and that's why I brought it up as, like, a girl power fantasy. Hey, what was that? That wasn't very good, guys. That was some other influences, though, up in that. Yeah, Arrival was good.
Oh, actually, Arrival also came out in 2016.
Oh, wow. This is really busy then, huh? Like, the house is definitely a creature feature. Like, we're getting little stats here and there. It's supposed to, like, here's some rules.
I wouldn't say so. Like, I don't think that it is.
Not primarily. Like, with Lights Out, there's definitely a monster, and it's definitely, they definitely want to do a Babadook. And with Arrival, there's a monster. It's an alien, but there's more involved in the story. I think, like, how people call certain things a scented horror or whatever because they're cheesy. It's sort of like that to me, in that it's birthed in a very similar, like, spaces where people are trying to, like, make a thing, something awful, sort of creepypasta writing kind of thing. Like, you're making a dude. And I think there's, like, I think that's a bit of, like, the disconnect, because there's also, like, a story happening there.
I think he leans more into the creature aspects as it goes on.
Yeah, that's what I
truly
mean.
Think that this story was not supposed to go on as long as it did.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he just, like, got... Feature his creep. Head got too big because it got popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, feature creep.
Oh my god, it sucks so bad where it ends off, where, like, he sold it and, like, it just... the wet floppest of endings of a story. There's another thing that's really annoying that happens in the blogosphere entries where he overuses the doors open part when it's, like, a really... You feel it in, like, the original story and it gets run into the ground by the time you're done with it. Like, okay, it's no longer scary.
I will admit, I don't tend to get even, like, creeped out by stories that we read for this podcast, because we read a lot of shit stories, frankly. Not to be rude or anything. Yeah. I know people put their hearts and souls into these things, but, like, we do read a lot of fucking stinkers on this podcast.
Yeah.
But, like, I did, honestly, like, I was not really feeling it at first. I was like, okay, you're kind of, like, they sort of do that, like, problem that you get in epistolary stories sometimes where people have to sort of, like, over describe and describe their way around something so that the reader gets a picture of it and it doesn't feel like the way people actually write letters or emails to each other.
I have a thing to say,
like,
about that, but
it's overly, like, ruminatory on a lot of stuff in order to try to give the reader sensory details, which is, like, it feels like a problem with the author's ability to handle, like, the epistolary format. And, it's fucking hard.
It is.
Like, it's really hard to write a good epistolary style story without running into that exact pitfall. But, like, because of that, because I was noticing this sort of, like, weakness in the writing, it was really taking me out of it until we get to Mark's texts.
Yeah.
And then I was like, ooh,
I'm a little scared.
But, like, that's the peak of the story. Like,
yeah, that's the best part of the whole story. I honestly kind of like the Danny.
I've thought about
life journal. I think it's cute. I think it's, like, a fun little flex of, like, being able to do a slightly different voice.
Yeah, there's, like some of the weaker stuff is the voice not being convincingly coming from other characters. But, like, some of it hits.
Yeah, that's a huge problem between, like, Eric and Mark sound exactly the same. And so do like, Connie woman, and Jenny when we hear from them.
Like, yeah, it's
they, all these characters sound exactly the same except Danny and Laureen. Danny is good. Laureen is very bad.
Laureen is this is like a full spectrum. Like if I had a critique about Danny, it's a little heavy handed. But there's some really nice stuff in there too, though. Like spelling night legs every time is really like it was terminally like don't do this. So someone covers it. There's a later typo that was really good. I should have written it down. I didn't. It was a later typo that felt more natural. Some of the context could be, like, padded out so it reads less like you're updating your horror scary blog and more like some actual live journal. But it's pretty solid for what it is.
It definitely could have been less neat, I guess. And, like, it has the vibe of, like, an adult man writing a teenage girl. And, like, knows a little bit of the stuff that he's supposed to say to make it sound accurate, but not all of the stuff.
It's like a weird girl power fantasy, but not how you would write that. Like, I struggle to find the right word to describe. It's because they're not mean, particularly, but they're not... And, like, it introduces a lot of cool... This is not related to the girl fantasy, but, like, the computer stuff was dope. A lot of the horror in it is dope.
I think what we're getting is that, like, women are allowed to have non-passive roles in the story. They're not necessarily active, but they are not strictly passive.
It's interesting to see the way it's presented.
Like, there is no sort of, like, grodiness about the women in the story, which, like... The other story that I thought of was Cabin Fever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Comparing, like, the way that the men in these stories talk about the women who are sort of, like, side characters.
Yeah. The grodiness in this story is often around men just also being, like, wrong. Like, they're being affected by the house. And it's making them, like, think these things, I think, is, like, the vibe we're supposed to get. Because they repeat very similar things. Like, are they being affected by, like, what's going on? Or are the women actually being, like, passive-aggressive, cheating on me kind of thing? Like, and when they die, there's no real evidence that, like, the women thought that. Like, they take over the blog spaces, they're looking for their loved ones and stuff.
We see, like, people who are affected by sort of the radius of this thing becoming, like, paranoid and...
Yeah.
For some reason, like, I originally had it in the summary, but I took it out because I thought it was going somewhere and it wasn't. But they make a big deal out of the fact that, like, Connie spends, like, a month throwing up or something.
Yeah, like, something's...
And that never comes back. She, like, has to go to the hospital because she keeps throwing up.
You spice up any story by giving one character food poisoning as a Tumblr post, like, billions of notes. Like, if I was building, like, theory craft, he might have, like, planned something and then he didn't go with that.
Yeah, there's definitely that some, like... seems maybe, like, what it was supposed to... Like, he sort of went in a different direction than what he thought he was originally doing.
What I think he was originally doing was he was gonna do, like, an,
Like, it was just gonna be Cabin Story. That maybe is why I was thinking about it, because I was like, oh, wife who throws up? Cabin Story.
Yeah,
so,
I think what he was aiming for, like, early on, what's that fucking, house with the axe burning and the demons and stuff?
What?
Amnesty. Whatever that was. Amnesty Horror? What's that called?
Amityville Horror?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That's the crab one, right?
That's a haunting in Connecticut.
Oh, no. Right.
No, yeah.
I can't remember which one I've seen. I've seen the one with the crabs, but I don't know if I've seen Amityville Horror yet.
Yeah. I meant Amityville Horror.
I think I've seen both.
Yeah. I think what he was aiming for originally was an Amityville Horror, where it's sort of like reoccurring killings happen in this space, and instead of killings, he went to go kill a different family. Like, this is an aside, I forgot how much the killing scene impacted me. Like, not like emotionally, just sort of like scene wise has always been like the back of my head. Like, where what's his face goes and shoots up the diner with the couple.
Oh yeah.
So I think what he was going for originally was sort of like family reoccurring killing thing with like an evil house and Connie's puking up because there's like, that's what happened before kind of situation, but then it didn't work that way. He just made her sick for a really long time.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah?
There's like 80 different Amityville adaptations.
Yeah, it's a big ass thing.
What the fuck?
People fucking make a movie about that fucking house. And the book manages to still be better than most of them, I think. And the book is just okay, so you know.
One of these in this Letterboxd list that I'm looking at is called The Amityville Cute Farting Cat. So, I don't...
Oh, sure, that one's good. I think we've reached the... This is like the horror... Well, I guess Alice in Wonderland is the horror equivalent of Alice in Wonderland. But comparable, I think we've reached maximum.
The tagline on it on Letterboxd is, in 2022, 12 Amityville movies were released. This is the 13th. What have I stumbled into? It's listed as being a minute long. I don't know if this movie is real.
Can you please screen cap in case it goes away before we make this episode?
And the summary is also, toots and spooks are abound as a cute farting cat encounters a haunting presence in the Amityville house.
I think we should win awards.
What does this mean? I feel like I'm scrying into another universe. God, that got me really fucking distracted. I can't even think right now.
Good episode, guys. My God, I mean, you and me. It's a wrap. That's it. It was a short one.
Episode over. Yeah, I had the opposite sort of reaction. Like the murder of the couple felt really like set dressing to me. It didn't hit for me as like a horror beat very well.
Like, I'm not sure it was, I wouldn't say that. I just like you know, like when you read something like ages and ages ago and like it sticks in your head and you like revisit it and you're like, "Oh, that's where that came from." It was like that feeling.
Yeah, like, it just like left an impact.
Yeah, like I've forgotten where this came from, but there's a sense of familiarity whenever there's like a gun shoot 'em up scene in like a cafe or whatever. Like, oh, my friend, this scene.
My friend Drew from House. I mean, that's another Evermed hybrid touch point, I think, because that's also almost certainly like what the Korinthal scene is banking on.
Oh, fuck, you're right.
Not scene, but like that bit in the Korinthal lore where there was like a riot at a diner where he killed a bunch of people or whatever.
Absolutely. Almost certainly. 100%. Holy fuck, wait. And sort of like the plot, that's like, this is what's definitely going on with like there's other lore and like metaphysics happening in Everyman Hybrid that's to the
there's
the
so original, much going
like, yeah there's so much there, but there's almost this is almost certainly like what's reflected in the doctor's house to start with, like like a lot of the scene here is sort of like, I think a lot of people forget that House of Leaves started as a web series, so like weird house horror really dominated the internet space in a way that it doesn't anymore in this specific way. There's a lot of like liminal spaces and like space horror, spatial horror, but like
not a lot of house stuff going on right now. I mean, we're probably going to see a resurgence of it with My House That Wad.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so.
Because that took off, like, that video and, like, people talking about My House. Like, I feel like houses are gonna come back. And we always have little sprinklings
house
of it.
Back in a
like,
big way.
2024, the year of the house.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be so funny if the housing market crashes in a way that we can all afford houses, like, right after we release this podcast?
Like, frankly, that's what it is. Like, people have, like, drifted a little bit away from house horror because, like people in our fucking generation can't afford to buy a fucking house.
Have you been in a... What was the last time you've personally been in a house? Oh, I think, like, houses that eat you is a really good subgenre of horror that I'm super into.
Yeah. Like, there's always been smatterings of it, right? Yeah. Because, like, house stuff...
House of Bones, good-ass movie.
Like, house horror... is kind of, like, thematic easy mode. I don't want to knock anybody writes house-based horror because it's all, it's good.
Often but box. It's,
I think, easier to make a house scary because it is the most immediate thing that you can defamiliarize, like, right? Because, like, what are you in and see, like, every day?
Yeah.
The place you live in, right? Which is why I think, like, the sort of, like, liminal space kind of horror took off the way that it did in, like, the COVID years.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was, like, outside and you can't see it. And it's like, oh, now you're experiencing it in a way you've never experienced before. And it's, like, resonant.
Yeah, there's a sort of, like, defamiliarization with these outside spaces. And this sort of, like, sense of, like, agoraphobia.
Dude, that's that so comes smart.
From, like, being locked in your house for a long time.
Yeah.
Which ended up sort of being folded into this sort of, like, back rooms, liminal space, weird space kind of
it's
horror.
It's, like, a lot of why... it's not hitting as much as it did now is because people are getting away from, like, the root, like, thing of it, what gripped people. And back to your point that house is easy. There's, I'm sure most people listening to it are familiar with the game Anatomy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was literally thinking, like, Kitty Horror Show's Anatomy.
That's, like, the thesis of that game is, like...
Yeah.
But it's scary because now it's, like... you're, like, in that space to make it scary, like, a house is, like, a blank slate.
Yeah, you can project anything that you want onto this place because it is the most familiar, like, because it is the closest to you. The different kinds of houses that we have in our society have very specific connotations about the kinds of people who live there and the kind of society that we live in, etc., that make it, like, very easy to reach for.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, this house has people in it.
Yeah.
Another sort of, like, one that was, like, pretty big a little while ago. But, man, like, when did Anatomy happen? Because this house happened in, like, 2013 or something, right?
Yeah, you can go number check if you'd like. I don't think my devices handle such a...
Okay, apparently this house has people in it. It came out in fucking 2016.
Holy Well, 2016 was a dope-ass year for horror. So much came out that fucking rocked.
Okay, Anatomy was also 2016!
2016 was a peak year for horror. I don't know what was going on there, but everything was firing on every cylinder for horror in 2016.
I think Get Out also came out in 2016, didn't it?
Yeah, like, 2016 was, like, I almost want to risk looking up stuff on my phone to, like, just give a list out of all the things that came out in 2016 that were horror. You can do the honor if you want.
There's something in the fucking water.
Yeah, we were just, like, fucking, I was on it.
Were scared. We were just scared in 2016.
We have so much to express. Then the industry was like, oh, fuck, they're making art. We have to crank out franchises. Not that franchise movies can't be, like, expressions of art of the people who are making it, but you know what I mean.
No, they can't.
Oh, okay. Well.
Laying that one definitively down. If it's in a franchise, it is no longer a sincere expression of art.
That's true.
Wow, I can't believe 2016 was the last year that art was good, you guys.
Like, I think, yeah. There's a joke about things peaking, like, technology-wise, and, like, it breaches into a new era of, like, tech, and that's how, like, you define, like, eras. I was like, eras, my god. That was it. Like, we've plateaued. Like, there needs to be, like, an intervention from, like, a higher being, or, like, we discover, like, a lost technology from the past. Because, like, I think we got it in 2016. That was it.
Yeah, we're about to hit some Celestine prophecy shit. Hey, should we talk about Loreen?
Yeah, it was not good. What a fucking wet blanket, wet mush.
What a waste of fucking time.
Yeah, to end that on, to like, just end your fucking epic ass story on this just awful, bad thing you did.
And it kept going for a long time, too.
Oh my
God. There were sometimes like years in between journals being posted. And it's like, why are you continuing to do this? You either do not have time to be working on this consistently, or, like, you're under, like, some weird strictures right now, or you don't have any ideas.
It's probably a combination of all three. Like, like, it's like an electric shock to a dead frog sort of situation, I feel like that blog was. Like,
it's so weird. It gives a bunch of, like, unnecessary lore. It's not like Loreen was a character who was mentioned before in Mark's narrative. Like, if she had been, maybe it would feel like it ties in and adds something. But as it is, it just feels like Connie just, like, randomly found this, you know, crazy old woman.
You know, it's kind of like a sequel within its own story. Like, read the franchise thing. Like, it has, like, movie 2 stink all over it.
Yeah. Like it feels like we're trying to, like, retread the greatest hits, but now there's more action.
Yeah, where it misses kind of, like, the horror and the point of the first one.
It's like Alien versus Aliens.
Yeah, oh my God. Wait, this might be genius. This might be, like, a commentary on...
It was not intentional. It was not intentional whatsoever. No, this person just, like, got, like, high on his own farts and, like... thought, like, what if I kept going?
This is a fart-heavy episode.
The dialect that Loreen is written in is also, like, real shit.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, that sucked.
Okay, there's two reasons why that sucked. I want to talk about one reason, particularly.
Uh-huh.
Is that someone not familiar with the internet doesn't type like this. Like, you can't have a character who's like, I'm technologically backwards, here's how I type, it's gonna be verbal dialect. Like, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
And you know, like, that's not how it works, mister.
People who were not, like, raised on the internet, like, old people, write extremely formally when they are writing because they are trained to think of all personal writing that they are doing as letter writing.
Yeah.
Which is very formal and, like, also, like, it feels sort of like a confused dialect thing happening. Because she's from fucking Idaho, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's from Idaho and she lived in Utah for a little while. Like, she sort of moved around. But she's moved around in, like... the northwest of the country for the most part, the northwest to west. And it feels like she's being given sort of like a generic, like, Appalachian hillbilly sort of dialect because that is what a guy from California thinks that everyone rural sounds like.
Yeah, it's like that. And I thought maybe we're supposed to read her as someone who isn't white by this thing. So I think he might be doing a racism or something, but it might just be him assuming everyone who's not from California talks like that. It's hard to tell without...
I feel like it may just be a case of California stupid.
Yeah.
Like...
There's a grade of bad here, so the benefit of the doubt would be California stupid. And that's how you know it's really bad, when that's, like, the best option here.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the most grace that we can offer this person's writing choice in this case is maybe you're just from LA. Like,
that made people so angry when people were talking about that a while ago, like LA writing. Like, well, it's true. I'm sorry.
If you get angry about that, it's because you're from LA.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, you're you simply don't understand how real people talk or live anymore.
Yeah.
You live in LA.
And, like, it's the same could be said about New York writers when they had writers at the time. It's just, like, you're just not... You're insulated. I'm sorry.
Honestly, like yes, but, like, I feel like New York stupid
is
not
stupid.
As bad as California stupid.
It's a different stupid,
because, like, yes, New Yorkers do think that they are the center of the world, but they are sort of self-aware about the fact that they think that they're the center of the world, where people from LA think that, like, people from LA don't think that LA is the center of the world. They just think that the entire world is LA.
Yeah. It's like a spectrum. Not maybe, maybe like an axis. It's like a, like a quad of some sort. A graph. I
don't know what you're talking about at this point. You're just listing off things that lines can be on.
It's on something with lines. A pie chart, maybe. What are we talking about?
The other thing that that Loreen reminded me of was that Mama Lynn, like, fake Reddit story. It's like, it's either, like, an Am I the Asshole or like, an r/relationships post that took off a while ago. And it's that one where there's, like a rural woman from, you know, down south or whatever, like, Kentucky or Tennessee or something. And she has, like, a gay son and, like, a shithead abusive husband. And, like, the son catches shit from the husband, and she, like, kicks the husband out of the house, and I love being an ally mom, and then, like, a couple updates later was like, by the way, I'm bisexual.
Then
a couple people were like, guys, the story is fake, and then she deleted everything and wiped everything off of the post.
It does feel like
that's
that
what Loreen reminds me of, like, that exact dialect.
I was watching a Silk Road documentary for, like, the internet one and stuff. And they're talking about, like, the ways they could tell, like, certain posters, like, doing stuff under aliases.
Were feds.
Yeah. That. But, like also, like, people who are, like, involved in it were posters is because they had very specific sort of, like, ways of, like, their type and sort of, like, people who grew up on typewriters would, like, double, or, like, even early, like, word processor users and stuff, type, like,
yeah, double space after a period.
Yeah, stuff like that. And it's, like, those kinds of weird formatting quirks are completely absent in her blog, so it's hard to buy anything. Yeah. It's, like, that would be common knowledge. Like, I feel like you know that. So he, like, didn't go with a believable thing and just made, like, voices that didn't sell the story it was doing.
Like, before the dominance of platforms that we're seeing today, like, we have all these decentralized, like, broad communities. There was this really crucial part of being in a niche internet community that you had to, like, you had to learn to speak the local dialect. That's why we had stuff like Lurkmore, and that's where we get stuff like 4chan's, like, new fag and stuff, because, like, internet dialects were so much more specific and people were so much more aware of that being, like, a level of local etiquette to, like, learn how to talk to people and how to communicate in different settings. And like, Loreen has what reads to me like a very strong subset of, like, that classic LiveJournal liberal kind of dialect. And that would work if she was supposed to be, like, a chronic poster on LiveJournal. But it comes across really inauthentic if she is supposed to be a middle-aged woman from Idaho who barely knows how to use the internet. It's very immersion-breaking. Like, if she's supposed to be a middle-aged woman, like, in her 40s or 50s in 2004, she would have been born in, like, the fucking 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
Like,
she's tabbing those paragraphs in. She's double-spacing after those periods.
Like, he puts, like, a weird amount of emphasis on her, like, telling us about, oh, she can only get access to a computer through these internet cafes and how she smells bad and stuff. And it just feels like, hey, someone who's in this situation is not going to be, like, talking about how they got kicked out of the computer cafe because they stink. Because that is a fucking humiliating, embarrassing thing to go through. Like, no one's upfront saying stuff like that. You just think that rural people are animals.
Yeah.
Because like, you're from fucking California.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's actually from California, and I'm not going to look it up. But I'm assuming that he is, because I'm pretty sure Eric lives in California. Like, the character of Eric, and also, like, from California is just a thing that we say derisively about writers who are being stupid in, like, a particular way. And you know what? We're right as often as not. And, like, with 50 states, that's a crazy punt to take. You know, our numbers are pretty good.
How much of this do you think was, like, venting about not having like a house space.
This was like in opposite of housing crisis time. That's like 2004, true. This was right when the housing bubble was about to burst.
That's
when
true.
People were like being given homes that they could not afford according to the bank. Like,
huh.
This is a metaphor for the housing crisis. This is a metaphor for predatory loans.
Oh my god. It's just like the way we're talking about her and like her location she is really made me think for a second, like, you know how people were like, you won't catch me dead in wherever middle America state, even though the housing is really cheap, that kind of thing?
I think he just wanted to sort of, like, tie a bunch of stuff together.
Yeah. Give the monster like, some
like
stats.
Like, things that he felt like were dangling threads from Mark's story. And also, yeah, wanted to give some monster stats. Because it's aliens now. We're in aliens territory.
Hey, like, I was down before it was, like, fleshy and stuff. So, like, you know.
The pacing throughout also feels like kind of a problem. Like, I understand that this is supposed to be caused by, like, house mania or whatever. But the way that people, like, immediately jump to very weird conclusions.
Yeah. And it's, like, a problem with, like, the format and that it's a horror story told in like this kind of like this is a problem with like chapter or like part updating in like any writing, not just like horror. It's like the least optimal way to tell a story that relies on like the completeness of a theme to have structure or something, you know?
Yeah, like the whole thing feels really rushed at a lot of times. Like it just feels like the pace is just fucking breakneck.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he was worried that like he'd lose audience if he didn't like update feverishly.
I don't know. I mean, like you can update quickly. It's just like it feels like the story that he had in mind simply did not have enough to it. Because what happens in Mark's narrative, right? Like, he learns about Andrew, he goes to a couple places and learns a little bit more, he finds the house, he goes, you know, to Idaho and talks to the Madsen's cousin, and then he finds the other house, and then he dies. Like, there's only a couple of things that happen. So we need to experience him deteriorating extremely rapidly in a way that feels like, this is too fast. We need to slow down. Even if there had just been, like, even if it was stuff that we hadn't seen, but we saw that there were days in between these updates, it would feel a little more natural and not like, oh, this is, like, a quick slope.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not comparable one-to-one, because they're different. Like, the formatting and, like, the style and the decade this was released in, they're very different. But one thing that does it, this sort of thing really well, this, like, fast decaying, was my childhood house.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because that felt earned.
Yeah.
Because it was going back and revisiting a childhood memory and like childhood experiences and the feeling of like the weight of someone's entire life behind this moment, where this, the core trauma is like a guy that you were kind of friends with but didn't like all that much started acting weird and you felt guilty about it and then he killed someone.
It's like, it's okay to just have like a snippet of a concept. It's okay just like, like, Candle Cove isn't a sprawling narrative. It's a little thing that fucks. It's okay to just do that. It's fine. You don't need it. It's got him a job, so, like,
Candle Cove would suck if he tried to drag it out to an entire thing, and we know that.
Yeah.
Because he made a TV show, and it was bad.
Yeah, this got him, like, an award-winning career and stuff, but, like, it would have been a perfectly fine story if it was just kept short and punchy and to the point of the horror. Maybe your life would have been very different, I guess. Who knows what the wheel would have turned for you.
I mean, even if he had quit while he was ahead
and
ended the story when Eric died, that would have been enough.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, like, but like, maybe he wouldn't have been Scouted well, by...
I mean, no, because that is the point at which he sold the rights to the stories when Eric died.
Oh, never mind then. Why the fuck did you do all that other stuff?
That is when he talks about how he's being approached right. by producers. That's when the story, like, becomes viral, as people, like, reading back through all of the material up to Eric's death.
Yeah, I
don't know when any deals were finalized, potentially, because, like, the last update was in 2006, but stuff like this takes a really long time, and also the movie never happened.
But yeah, in my mind, it was a little further in, but, like, you're right, they were probably talking sooner, sort of, like, the lived experience of it while being, like, 13 is different than, like...
Yeah, like, the archival reading
yeah.
sort of distorts... The time that it takes.
Yeah.
Were you, like, on it, like, while it was still
yeah,
updating?
Yeah, yeah. I was, like, the fact that it just, like, you know, stops and you learn about that he sold the rice.
This was your Ben Drowned,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, yeah. In my mind, this was, like, the story. This is, like, when, like, people are like, oh, I'm stopping my story here because I want to make a book, I want to make a movie. I'm like, oh, nope, it's not going to happen. It didn't happen to this guy. It's not going to happen. I had no idea he got, like, scouted and was, like, a fucking a Hollywood dude now. Like, oh. Exciting revelations.
What I have to assume happened, like, the process of what I assume happened is that, like, the movie ended up not materializing because... You know, there were kinks that didn't get, you know, worked out. There's a fucking 1.5 million spec scripts
yeah.
and, like, things that get purchased by a studio and every single year that just do not make it into production.
Yeah.
There was almost no book that is published in the last 20 years that a studio hasn't bought the rights to produce something for, and then they just don't produce anything. It's just about owning the rights. But having the rights to your thing bought introduces you to a whole bunch of people
yeah.
and a whole bunch of industry connections,
yeah.
which makes it so much easier to get another book published
yeah.
or to get your screenplay made. Like,
it's a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah. Like, you may get a second agent
yeah.
for media stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
people don't realize it, but, like, unless you're, like, obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably into something, things like this, so you listening now probably know this, but, like, a lot of people who don't listen to podcasts recreationally don't really realize it, but, like, Pitchman is, like, a full-time career people have that make money just, like, doing that. Just, like, selling things that almost certainly never get made, that just get bought and, like, held in, like, a dark vault somewhere.
I have to assume that's much less, like, present and lucrative in the current landscape.
Like, that's true.
Like, post, like, 2007 writer's strike
yeah.
landscape.
Okay, well,
like,
that used to be a lucrative career that people would just do exclusively. That's the reason why if you go into any sort of, like, writing circles that are sort of, like, script-focused, why people are always like, help me sharpen my tagline up. Look at my tagline. Let's share my tagline. Because people are still sort of, like, I don't know if it's, like, school-based or if that's just, like, the here's a collection of books you should read to go be a writer or whatever. But, like, people are still sort of, like, pitchman trained, I guess. So people focus on that kind of stuff and you enter those spaces.
Yeah, I mean, like, you do have to know how to sell
yeah.
your thing. Like, you have to know how to query. But, like, particularly for, you know, screenwriting, the industry has really become a crapshoot in the last several decades. Like,
astronomy for Californians.
Astrology?
Astrology for Californians. Yes, that's what I said.
Hey, speaking of stars, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Jack Parsons gets a mention. Do you want to talk about that? What the fuck was up with the Jack Parsons thing?
Oh my god. I took my notes on my computer. I was like, oh fuck, I won't be able to open this while I'm doing Catosity. So I wrote my notes, and I taped my notes on the wall so I would make paper sounds, and I didn't transcribe this. I forgot that this was in the story, and also made me really angry. First, like, why would you pick him? There are so many architects who are, like, mystics and occultists and stuff. He didn't do anything with houses. He's like,
yeah, he was a fucking, like, physicist.
The father
of
rocket
scientists.
He's
like, what the fuck are you talking about? He was a rocket man. What are you talking about? It was such a bizarre pull.
Yeah, it's just like he picked, like, a spooky guy. But, like...
Or, and, like, even if you don't want to go the houses route, there is absolutely nothing about Parsons or his belief system or the way that he managed himself that screams, like, evil fly traps. Like, he wasn't a Satanist. Yeah. Like...
His occult activities are well documented. They, like... Yeah. Everyone knows...
Like, Thelema itself, or Thelema, I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it, I've only ever seen it written, but, like, it does not have a lot to do with what they are talking about.
Yeah, at all.
Like, this is nonsense. I feel like he just picked, like...
Like a recognized...
An occultist?
Yeah.
Who was, like, recognizable, but less popular than, like, Crowley or LeVay.
Oh my god.
Right?
That did not age well, because he's, like, people realize he's hot, and, like... He was, I don't know, people.
You could say you.
Oh, okay. It wasn't age well for me particularly. I did. My husband, Jack Parson.
Your astral husband.
Yeah. What is this timeline he's making? Why is it so far back to the present?
Yeah, like, what is the point of that? Why?
What is he teaching these people? No, like, it doesn't get brought up again because the story just ends, but, like, why is it brought up at all?
Yeah, and that's the last entry, so it just feels like fucking nonsense. Like it's clearly supposed to be our hook.
Yeah.
Going forward into the rest of the story. And maybe he was planning to do some, like, some Shelby Oaks stuff.
Yeah.
Where, like, ooh, I'm giving, like, a little lead and a little teaser into, like, what the movie's gonna be about.
Maybe.
Ooh, some Jack Parsons lore to sort of sprinkle in there.
Well, that would have, like, been nonsense. So good thing it got shoved in a fucking gobble.
I mean, yeah, but yeah, it goes nowhere and it feels really stupid, especially yeah. since we know that the movie's not ever happening. And should never happen because this would not be good as a movie.
Yeah, it would not. It's one of those things where people think you could just, like, send a story to a superior format, but it's, like, that's not real. Like, you've made it up. Like, it's only good because we're looking at it like an online story. It's emails, dude. It's a blog. The entire movie is, like, done over the shoulder of someone using the library. I think it would be avant-garde, I think. We should pick it back up, actually. I've changed my mind.
Who would you even be following?
The way the information gets, like, doled out in later stuff, especially is that part. There's, like, a podcast, like, franchise network or whatever. There's, like, Black Tape, Santanis, and it hit a very specific sort of, like, that line. And I do believe those podcasts are really heavily inspired by, like, online horror and stuff, even though it never really dips mm-hmm. into online spaces. It's hard to be like, well, that didn't come from anywhere. So it feels like this got absorbed into the writer's, like, synopsis and stuff, but nothing is necessarily based on it. It's just sort of like the way, like, figures are just dropped into the story. It's tied in now. Just, like, whatever. He features heavily in it, and it's making me, like, rethink those plot lines.
Wait, sorry, who features heavily?
Yeah, Jack Parsons features heavily in Tannis's and Black Tape's, like, plot lines. It's making me rethink the inclusion. Just having a thought.
I feel like Jack Parsons is the pole because it's sort of striking the balance between, like, it's not making up a guy whole cloth to be your, like, spooky occultist who is sort of, like, vaguely, like, associated with, like, Satan stuff, especially if you don't know what, like, Thelema is obviously, yeah. like, nonsense. It is, yeah. it is goofy, like, white boy new age excuse to, like, make women strip for you.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
He was really into Pan, though, so I suppose if you're doing...
Satanism isn't real. Satanism was invented by edgelords in 1902 in order to look cool. Like, Satanism is not real.
Like,
it never happened.
Like, yeah, in the way, like, the pop culture media thinks of Satanism, right? Like, because, like, yeah. if you define Satanism as just sort of, like, anti... whatever the main religion is, and it's sort of like a subcategory of, like, beliefs, Yeah, that's why, you know?
Satanism is a boogeyman. Yeah. Satanism was invented by the Catholic Church hundreds of years before LaVey.
Yeah.
Nobody practiced it.
Yeah. It's kind of like the concept of, like, how people view modern-day Hades stuff, but people didn't, like, worship Hades, but people had, like, cultural stuff around it, and if you were, like, into that, you were, like, anti... Like,
it's like there's never been a group of people who authentically and unironically were like, yes, we're the evil people.
Yeah, that's it. That's
right.
Like the people who people who label it are labeling it as like an other. Like people who have those belief systems don't view themselves as the other, though. They're like genuine beliefs, you know?
Like even like modern day Satanism, the point of it is not that they worship Satan and they love being evil. Like Satanism is also like crackpot bullshit. Satanism is just like edgelord nonsense. Even the avowed Satanists, their thing is not we love being evil and killing and mating. Like they're just edgy atheists. That's all Satanists are. Like, that's pretty much all that they've ever been, is, like, edgy agnostics and atheists. Mm-hmm. It's like calling yourself a secular humanist, but for, like, 13-year-olds.
Or, like, even if they do, like, spiritual things, it's, like, it's not a cultural thing. Like, there's no, like, shadow organization group of people with, like, you know? Like, that's not real.
Yeah. Man, I was... This is completely unrelated, but, like, I was reading some nonsense lately about... So... I'm fascinated by DID discourse, like altar discourse.
Yeah.
I do not have DID. I have some good friends who do. But I am sort of fascinated by the permutations of like teens who may or may not have dissociative identity disorder talking about their communities online and people talking about... I somehow stumbled onto a group of teenagers who very sincerely believe, quote-unquote, ritual abuse...
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
is a like, not only is a thing, but is, like, a uniquely evil thing. Yeah. And it just, like, it fucking sticks in my craw. Like, how can you be, like, a gay atheist person...
Uh-huh.
And think that ritual abuse is a special type of abuse.
Yeah.
What about it being in a, quote, ritual setting makes it worse than any other kind of physical or sexual abuse?
Yeah.
Quickly.
The bomb's about to go off.
Without using any, like, without quoting any biblical verses, quickly, tell me what makes it different.
Yeah. The reason why certain things are bad is because they, like, tie you to, like, bigotry stances and, like, maladaptive living and stuff, and that can occur in any space.
Things are significant because we imbue them with meaning.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the only reason that we think that there should be some kind of special, especially satanic ritual abuse that is particularly, like, evil and dangerous is because... We live in, like a culturally Christian society that has insisted for the last 1,200 years that there's a specific group out there called the worshippers of the devil and who are going to do bad things to you. That's the only reason why that even would, like, occur to someone. That is, like, a special evil thing. And that is, I think, sort of at the core of why the Jack Parsons thing does not pass the sniff test.
Yeah.
Because it's like, why? Why would Jack Parsons, being associated with this thing, make it scarier and more dangerous quickly without quoting a Bible verse?
And like, it fundamentally just doesn't make sense because he doesn't have anything to do with houses.
Yeah. He doesn't have anything to do with any of this. Like... Like, yes, he was a scientist. What is scientific about any of this? What, like, he wasn't an architect.
Yeah. Again, like, and again, there are plenty of, like, occultists and mystic architects that, specifically from this time period and a little bit earlier and a little bit afterward, that he could have pulled from. Yeah. There's an entire fucking fleet of people doing, like, the Winchester House.
That's literally the plot of Magnus Archives.
Yeah.
Like the plot of Magnus Archives is that there was, like, a cadre of evil architects.
Who are real and affect our lives with their behaviors. We live in a really strange... Oh, there was a really good post going around about, like, burglars and, like, houses and stuff and how they're made.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck, it's really good. Our world is structured by people with opinions about how, like, houses, how the space we should live are in. And sometimes these people think, like, ghosts live in our spines and stuff, and they build houses around that. And those people made prisons and, like, schools and, like, fucking houses we live in junk.
The spaces that we live in are made to be interfaced with in certain ways, and there is no particular reason why we have to interact with these spaces the way that we do, other than that is how the spaces teach us to interact with them.
Yeah, oh my god.
Like, and the way that we have been taught we are supposed to... It is ridiculous to buy 5 locks for your door if you have a glass window anywhere in your house.
Yeah.
Why would a burglar go to the effort of knocking your door down? You have a glass window.
Yeah, exactly. And there's another part in that quote thingy. It's like, our walls are just like air, basically. Like, nothing prevents anyone from, like, sawing into that bad boy unless you have, like, serious plaster or cement in there. Like... And what defines, like, where, like, a door goes.
Reading that sort of, like, changed something in my brain a little bit. Yes. Like, oh my god, like I've thought about that window thing for a long time. I've been thinking about, like, I'm a very anxious person. So, like, I have thought about, like, this paradox of, like, the glass window and the locked door. But, like, it's confronting to think about how much that applies to just everything in my life. Like, 80% of the way that I move through the world is me, like, following these social ant trails that, like, I don't actually have to follow, except for the implicit threat of violence if I break the rules. Why would a thief use the door?
It's so fucking
good.
Why
wouldn't a thief cut a hole in the wall? What a great little piece of writing.
Oh my god, we'll link it. It's fucking so good. People who commit those sort of crimes are also wired into the housing structure. You'll watch, like, Ring Cam. I watch a lot of Ring Cam stuff, I'm not gonna lie. It's like, I don't want to, it's a bad habit. But, like, you'll see people go through doors and, like, be stopped by really simple stuff. And it's, like, because they're also thinking like that. Like, people who are professionals don't necessarily think like that. They're also not going to hit up your dinky-ass house either, so don't even worry about it. Lots of these things are staged. But, like, people who are, like, just doing it because the opportunities in front of them are also, like, they'll go through a door because that's what they're supposed to do. I think about that guy who, like, sits and smiles and, like, films himself. And it might be staged, it might be real. I like to think it's real and there's whimsy and horror in the world. The guy who, like, sits and stares and smiles at the camera for, and one time he got broken into and the guy just, like, opened the door, closed the door and left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got freaked out seeing this guy not react, just sit and smile.
Oh, that's really good.
I mean, like, burglaries do happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, the things that we think are protecting us from those forces are not protecting us, and they never will.
Good night.
Well, like, it's because, like, that illusion of security has to be there because that is the foundation, like, the current society. Yeah. If they didn't exist, then the people in power would no longer have power. They have a vested interest in teaching us and encouraging us to interact with the world in particular ways. Like,
yeah, like once your eyes are sort of like open to like how fake that all is. A tree could smash through your house at any time. Like, nothing stops things from happening, and, like,
yeah,
it's all superficial.
So what we're saying is, steal.
Yeah. There are no rules.
Rules have been imposed upon you by people who don't want you to know that you freely can't do anything. That's not the point of this podcast. Don't listen to us. This is non-actionable, this is not legal advice.
Listen, Target's too high of a... I know it's gonna seem easy and you already shop there, but that's too high of a thing if you're not used to it. Aim lower. Hi, Jonah.
Hi. Thank you for telling people to steal on our podcast.
You're welcome.
Well, it looks like we're going to wrap it up there for tonight. What did you think of the Dionea House? Leave a comment, send us an email, and tell us your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. If you like the show, go ahead and leave a like or a review, rate us, and share us with your friends. On our next episode, for a little change of pace, we're going to be speedrunning. This has been the Creepypasta Book Club. Thank you, and good night.